everybody, and welcome to the latest edition of No Filter Sports Podcast. As always, I'm Bob Page and joined by the great Danny McClain, Major League Baseball's last 30-game winner. Eli is off playing golf today, which is a priority, and why shouldn't it be at this stage of his life and career? And we're happy to have back our longtime colleague and friend, Fred Heumann, the Detroit and Lansing sports reporter and anchor. And Fred is going to have a lot to say because the Big Ten football season is going to happen. Now, the U.S. Open is underway as we record this Thursday morning at Wingfoot in suburban Mamaroneck here in New York City. So we can talk more about that later. But that's a big deal, boys. The Big 13 plus Rutgers will play after all. Unanimous decision to play by the university presidents and coaches. So the question I asked in the last show, why didn't he do it to begin with when other conferences did? Why did it take so long to arrive at this redecision? And why can't they play now for more than a month? October 24th start?
That's setting it up on a tee. I mean, because it's dangerous. It's a dangerous way to go. They're going to be spitting and slobbering all over each other, just like a football, ordinary football game. If they let, they become more vulnerable if they let the fans in the stadium. They don't let the fans in the stadium. It's not that I would say, yes, sir, go ahead and play anyway, but at least it'll be a little bit safer because the people who are taking the risk are the players. And I know they want to play. You know they want to play. They want to just demonstrate their wares and hopefully get in the NFL and make millions of dollars. But you know what? They say the Big Ten said they are going to have the best bulletproof bubble of any organization. So we'll wait and see. And because it's only going to take one or two guys before something bad happens.
They don't have a bubble. It's not like the NBA or NHL.
They don't have a bubble. And I am surprised that it's not the 17th anyway. Why wait till the 24th? Surprise me. To me, there's two things, guys, why this happened. Money and public pressure. Okay. And when I watched a lot of football last weekend. Okay. There wasn't much on, but I think I watched a lot because of my thirst for college football. I love it. And when I saw,
not to mention, Freddie, the NFL playing
right,
too.
Right. And the NFL played Sunday. So as I watched that weekend go through, I said to myself, it's only a matter of time. I didn't know when the Big Ten's going to jump into this because they were taking the cautious approach. They postponed the season long ago. I think it was more than a month ago. And now they're saying, hey, these other teams are playing. And everybody I know is saying, why can they play football in South Bend and in Cincinnati and they can't play in Columbus and in Ann Arbor and in East Lansing? And so there was great public pressure on the Big Ten and the commissioner. And it's big money. Bill Beekman, the athletic director at Michigan State, says now that there's a season, even without fans, we stand to break even. Break even. What does that tell you had there not been a season? So right. Money and public pressure caused this deal because they're watching other people play and they're not playing and they stand to look very bad.
And we got the head of the CDC yesterday having his own press conference talking about there's one way to really, besides a vaccination, if it ever does come.
It will.
He preached and preached and preached yesterday about even better than a vaccination is a mask. A mask. He said it at least a dozen times. But here we are. We're throwing guys out there without masks. They're going to slobber all over each other. And these kids are at risk. And you're right, Fred. It's all about money.
Okay, so here's the deal. They're going to play an 8-game regular season followed by a championship game. There's a long list to assuage the Denny McClains of the world. There's a long list of procedures they've instituted, including cardio tests for all players to make sure nobody has a pre-existing condition that might make them susceptible to dying from COVID-19. So they're going to test after every practice and every game. And drum roll, please, ladies and gentlemen, there's going to be green, orange and red tiers for each positivity rate. For team positivity rate, the breakdown is 0 to 2% infections for green, then it goes up to 2 to 5 for orange and greater than 5 for red. For population positivity rate, 0.3, and so on and so forth. So here's the deal. If a team falls within the green or orange tier, practices, competition, games go on as scheduled. But if it's red, you're shut down. So think about this. It is at least conceivable that after a Friday afternoon practice and testing, the next day's Michigan-Michigan State game or Michigan-Ohio State game could be suddenly canceled.
Sure. It's got to happen.
That's the risk we take. That's what everyone's taking. It's a new era. It's a different time. And indeed, just like when, look, how many of us thought the Major League Baseball season was going to be canceled when all those Marlins and then the Cardinals and then they took a week off and 2 weeks off. And we all thought, well, the season's going to be canceled. It's only a matter of time. That's why there are protocols. That's why there are contingencies. And the Big Ten has at least covered every base, at least we think, by these guidelines, partially which Bob shared. I mean, there are 1,000 protocols and 1,000 options. And yes, indeed. And this is my criticism of them not playing the season. Okay. First of all, if you get tested, doesn't mean you're going to get sick or die. Secondly,
that's a big point right there, especially if you're a young athlete in peak condition.
Right.
Oh, wait, hang on a minute. Wait, before you
continue. We disagree with you, Danny, Freddie, and
okay.
I do.
In the month of July, kids under 15, 249 of them died in the month of July only. So let's
did you read the article or did you just read the headline?
Hang on a minute, Bob.
Did you read the article, Danny?
You're so far to the right now. It's unbelievable. These kids, everybody was under 15, 249 of them. So let's not talk about just because they're in great shape. Because at one time people were saying, if you're a young child, you can't get this. And of course, we now know anybody can get this.
And this is why I have such a problem with some of the mass media coverage of COVID-19, specifically the New York Post, the New York Times, CNN. If you read that article, Denny, which I did, over 75% of those kids had a pre-existing medical condition. It's not the bubonic plague. That's why they died.
It wasn't 75% either.
And I understand what you're saying, Denny. Being in shape doesn't make you immune from this. But I'm saying we all live in a COVID era. Okay? I walk out to the store today or stop at a store. I'm at risk. Everything we do now is at risk. Yep. You stop and have lunch somewhere, you're at risk. I don't care if you eat outside or inside or have a mask or don't have a mask. We are all living at risk in this era. My point has been, and I don't want to make this political, is how long are we going to hide in our basements and not live our lives? And I don't think football
and close players, down businesses and put right, and, people in bankruptcy.
Oh, you prefer what we heard the other day, we should just go ahead and do the herd and then let everybody get it, and then we'll lose another couple of million people. We're going over 200,000 this week. Over the weekend.
Okay. Well, we don't want to get into this COVID debate again, but you can't, you know, Eli says, well, you know, we got to stop talking about this. How can we stop talking about this?
This is our environment.
This is sports. This is, and it's a society too. Now, the Big 14, I'm sorry, Fred, I refuse to call it the Big 10. The Big 14 says they're not going to have any public sale of tickets, though each university can decide whether players' family members can attend. And they still don't have the specific schedules as we record this again on a Thursday morning release. So we wait for all this stuff. And did you see, since you want to mention politics, or since you did, Mr. Trump did not waste any time taking credit for his role in the Big 14 reinstating the season. There was a major problem, though, during the White House's afternoon press briefing yesterday. While listing the states that were affected by Wednesday's announcement, the latest White House press secretary, Kayleigh McEnany, mistakenly included Mississippi in the Big Ten instead of Michigan. I'm sure the brilliant Sarah Sanders would have done the same, though.
Okay, well, we can forgive her for that. She's not a sports guy.
You know, we can call mistakes to anything that, you know, but they're all under a lot of pressure when that a guy is standing there. By the way, and I can't remember, I forgot to write his name down, but one of the presidents of the university said, well, Mr. Trump made a call or two. Mr. Trump had nothing to do with the vote, had nothing to do with influencing anybody, and this was independently done. So, you know, I'm not going to comment politically anymore. But the bottom line is they're going to play. Let's see what happens. Let's hope and pray that they can play the complete season and have their party at the end of the year and go from there. And then we'll worry about next year.
Yeah. And my point is why not try it? And Denny, you may take opposition with this, but to sit on the sidelines and not even attempt to play these games. And I think what happened is the Big Ten thought that they were going to be the leaders. They were going to be the leaders and best. And once they canceled their season, everyone else would follow suit and cancel their season. Lo and behold, other than the Pac-10 and the Mid-American Conference, which has a different setup, as you know, financially, so they almost had to cancel their seasons. The other conferences says, no, we're going to play. Hell, we're going to play. And the Big Ten sat back and watched all these games this weekend and heard all the criticism from players, from coaches, from ex-coaches, even from administrators, and they said, why not us? And that's where the public pressure comes in, not to mention – you know, the business people and the athletic directors looked at their coffers and see them getting empty for the whole year. There is no question this was money driven and pressure driven. There's no question in my mind. And I say, why not try it? And if it doesn't work, you shut it down.
I think it was Ohio State driven. It was Ohio State driven as well.
Feinbaum had a lot to do with Ryan Day
is going to be the next coming of, believe it or not, Woody and Urban rolled into one. This young coach is just tremendous. He's continued to build an unbelievable powerhouse. Just ask Michigan fans about that. And Ryan Day was the driving force initially, I think, behind this, along with Nebraska and Iowa, because he wants to win a national championship. And as always down there in Columbus, he got a chance to.
Well, I think Ohio State was a big player in this, and let's make no mistake.
Feinbaum was their president.
Yeah, he wants to win a national championship too.
And Ohio State stands to be the best and maybe the only chance to represent the Big Ten in the playoff picture, and to not have one of your best teams in the country, and Ohio State clearly is, even eligible for the postseason, would have left a stain on the Big Ten that would last forever. And I think Ohio State was a big driving force in this.
Yeah, here's a factor that we have to keep in mind with this bastardized Big 14 season coming up now. Look, for instance, at Michigan State's Jake Panasuk. This kid's a hell of a player. He's already opted out. But one of the top Michigan kids who opted out now has opted back in. And how about this? Michigan quarterback Dylan McCaffrey not only opted out, he says he's going to transfer.
Well, this has
This has nothing to do with COVID.
No.
He wimped out of the season because he likely wasn't going to start. I love Joe Milton. I think he's going to be a really good quarterback in Ann Arbor. As for Michigan State, Freddie, you're there and you follow the program probably closer than I do. I have never seen anything to indicate so far that Rocky Lombardi can be a winning quarterback at this level. And I haven't seen anything to indicate that that is not the starting quarterback for Michigan State.
Well, I agree with you. And I think that if Rocky Lombardi were going to be there, you know, granted, it's a new coaching era at Michigan State. So when there's a new coach, all bets are off. But Rocky Lombardi only played garbage time before. If he was really part of their future, he would have played more prominently, because D'Antonio, when he was there, always used the backup quarterback in key situations, first quarter and second quarter. This goes back through the years. And this kid didn't play in crunch time or any quality time. So that tells to me there is a wide open quarterback race at Michigan State with a new coach and a quarterback who hasn't really capitalized any
opportunities.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
I don't think the race is wide open.
You guys are sitting there making predictions like you really know what's going to happen. That's number one. Number two, let him play first. Let's find out who's going to play. We don't know who's going to play yet. We have no idea.
Rocky's going to start.
And you know what? We don't even know if they'll get through the first week without somebody collapsing and having a car crash. And let's take it easy with who's going to do what and how they're going to do it and
Here's my thing about Rocky Lombardi. Rocky Lombardi was a state wrestling champion in Iowa. I have no idea how D'Antonio recruited him away from the University of Iowa, Iowa State, or whatever. You take one look at Rocky Lombardi, as we have, Freddie and I have, on the football field, and you think, that guy's a football player. That guy's playing for me. But he's not playing quarterback. Put him at linebacker. Put him at tight end, Fred. Do something.
Well, with the new coach, that may happen. But I'm just saying D'Antonio would always tend to put his backup quarterback who had a future into key spots in the game. And we didn't see that much with Lombardi. Yeah. They see those guys. They see all these guys way more than any of us. They see them every day. The media is not even allowed in at practice anymore. We watch stretching. So I haven't seen a Michigan State practice in 11 years. George Perlis used to come over. This is how things have changed. While I was on the sidelines, when he's coaching the team, say, Freddie, you need anything? Now we can't. Now once stretching is over, they throw us out. So anyone in the media who tells you they've watched practice or they see what's going on, they're lying, because we don't see practice anymore.
This guy is so paranoid. Your colleague in Lansing of many years, Jack Ebling, told me sometime back that if he wants to talk to Mark D'Antonio, he doesn't have his cell phone number. He's got D'Antonio's wife's cell phone number. You call the wife, tell him who you are, though she knows you in some respects, like you, Fred. You call the wife, tell him, and then maybe you get to talk to the great man himself. That's not a real good way to do business in a one-horse market like Lansing.
Well, nobody had his cell number. I'll give you that. I didn't either. Everyone knows Izzo's number, and it's been pretty open. D'Antonio remained very private in that regard. I don't necessarily criticize that. I don't know if I share your belief that that's a bad way to operate, But you're right. Nobody was able to just call D'Antonio or text him and get an answer. That's the privacy fence he put up long ago, and it's the way he did
business. That's his personality, too.
Bottom line
is he's really not a real extroverted guy. I mean, he's more introverted than he is anything else. He hates press conferences, hates media people in Lansing, Michigan. So
I don't think he hates media people. I don't think he hates media people, but he does hate press conferences.
Yeah, but I think he hates
a lot of media people.
Oh. Does he? Fred? What's that? Does he still buy you dinner?
He never did. We got along fine, but I never sensed he hated media people, but he doesn't like press conferences.
He hates it.
And you can tell how uncomfortable he was by his body language when he did those things. Yeah. Even Saban seems to embrace it, but D'Antonio never did.
Yeah, that's kind of funny.
And Izzo loves it. Tom just loves it. Just unbelievable. Good guy.
We got so much stuff to do today, and we're going to have one of the most popular players in the history of Detroit Red Wings later, Darren McCarty. Very interesting guy. I think all you fans know that. So this should be another lively show after our lively show with Billy Shearer the other day. Right now, I want to tell you that with social distancing, you don't need your reading glasses to see somebody 6 feet away. But if you're our age, you still can't see your cell phone without your readers, and it drives me crazy. That's why so many people over 45 now who have lost their close vision. This disease is called presbyopia, by the way. They've been getting multifocal lens implants that enable you to see the tiniest print and also see perfectly at a distance. It's a life-changing and a lifetime-lasting procedure. Eli's been talking about this for a long time. He's had it done. Of course, people under 45 are still opting for custom LASIK from Dr. Yaldo, and that enables them to once and for all throw away their annoying contacts and my annoying reading glasses and the garbage for good. These surgeries are the safest with the fewest side effects in all of medicine. So get a free evaluation from Dr. Yaldo. It doesn't cost anything. And find out which procedure will change your life in ways you can only imagine. Call 1-800-398-EYES or go to YaldoEyeCenter.com and tell them No Filter Sports sent you, and you'll get $1,500 off the regular price. Eli also likes to tell you about Star Lincoln Mercury. Everybody in Michigan knows that Lincolns have a legacy of luxury cars. And if you buy one at Hoot McInerney Star, you're going to find the buying and service elements to be a hassle-free experience. It's part of why Star Lincoln is Michigan's premier Lincoln dealership, an exemplary family business started by Hoot McInerney, the legendary auto giant and philanthropist. In July alone this year, Star got nearly 100 five-star reviews. Here are a few. One woman reflecting what may have been written, saying, "My entire experience was more than wonderful." Another person, quote, "The buying process during this pandemic was made so easy at Star and safe, quicker than I anticipated." So drive the Star of the American automobile luxury industry. Make an appointment, 248-354-4900, or you can even buy effortlessly online at starlincoln.com. And you're listening to the No Filter Sports Podcast. Boys, I got a news item for you to throw out now. From Monday night, NFL ratings for the games fell nearly 11% from last year's opening Monday night games. And is this Black Lives Matter? What do you think's going on with this?
You know, I think I said it last week that I think certain elements have gone too far. I think people have been turned off by some of this. So I don't think a lot of people care if they kneel or stand or stay in the clubhouse anymore. I don't think that's a big deal anymore. But I trust that they've turned off the games for a couple of reasons. Number one, because of all of the monotony that's gone on with it, that they're going to play, they're going to do this, they're going to do that. And then the other thing is, you know what? There's still no fans in the stands. I think that makes a I didn't think it ever would make a big difference.
And the ratings should go up, Denny. Then TV should be up if there are no fans there.
Well, no, I understand.
Yeah, I do think
because I agree with you in the beginning of this, of that, in fact, the ratings should be way up if, in fact, nobody's in the stadium. But I think people are just turned off by all of the politicalness and all the other things that have gone on with the game. And, you know, listen, there's one thing. We're still in the middle of the pandemic. There's nothing we can do to change this until somebody figures it out.
Freddie?
Well, yeah, I don't think it's as pandemic related or as fans or no fans related as it
is
the social issue. People get inundated with this racial injustice, with the social injustice. They get it all day. They get it on the news. Sports has always been an escape, right? It's been a 3 or 4 hour escape from reality. And now people are turning on football games or basketball games to be entertained and to get away from all that stuff. And they are being inundated with this right. even before the game starts. And they don't like it. People yeah. don't like it. They turn on their television for 3.5 hours of an escape. And whether you agree with where they stand is irrelevant, okay? I'm not here to criticize their right to make that statement. I'm saying people don't want that thrown in their faces in their 3.5 hour window to get away from it all. To me, that's what it's about more than anything.
Yeah, I'm speaking to you today from our apartment in Midtown Manhattan, the city that never sleeps, New York City, the capital of the world. And just like Lansing, Michigan, or Detroit, there ain't nothing to do here, and there ain't nowhere to go here. So you would think, God, give me some escape, give me something. Oh, I know, I'm going to watch sports. And yet people are turned off, and they're tuning it out.
It's amazing. I just really find it amazing that the ratings are down. I really thought the first weekend would be big, especially you had Brady in one of the ball games. I mean, in our city, we had the Lions and the Bears. I'm surprised. I'm just really, really surprised that the ratings are this bad. And will they get better? I don't think this is going to be the baseline. I think it's going to get worse before it gets better because something –
I think time will tell on that.
Hang on a minute, Fred. I think we're all sitting around hoping for the next good thing because there hasn't been a lot of good things this past year.
To say the least. I saw a guy. I walked past some guy's business in Manhattan last week. He's got a huge sign on his front window. Of course, it's closed, of course. Yeah. And it says F, the other three letters, 2020 with 5 exclamation points. F 2020. Yeah. And that's the way it's been for everyone.
Yeah, it's been the most miserable year of most of our lives, whether you're our ages or whether you're Brandon's age or whatever. It's been an unbelievable year. But, Denny, I'm ready to hold off on the ratings. This might be an opening statement. This might be a way of saying, you know, I think after time, when the storylines develop and the games get more meaningful and the quote-unquote pennant races in football, when teams start jostling for position and the games get more meaningful – I think people may come back, but I think this is kind of a statement that we're not going to, you know, we don't turn on the games for this stuff. You know, all the tragedies that have happened, all the problems with the police department, we all understand that's real, but that's a societal issue and they don't want it thrown in their face during athletic contests. I know I don't. Yep. I find myself watching more golf than ever before. Now, I'm a big golf fan anyway. But you don't get all this in golf. You just enjoy the game.
Right.
They tee it up and they play for 5 hours or 6 hours and you don't get any of that in every sport now, especially in basketball and in football. We get inundated with this stuff. The stuff is on the court. It's on the fields. It's before the game. It's on the uniforms. The names of people are on their helmets and people just get tired of it. They get this all day,
right?
And they want an escape from it.
And you know, Tiger's a guy who obviously could have stood up for what's right versus what's wrong. But as Tiger says, I'm not black, so he's had nothing to say about this, and the politics has stayed out of golf. Now, think about this.
I don't blame him.
Wait a minute.
I'm not saying I blame him.
Did Tiger say he's not black?
Yes, he said that for years. He's not black. He's a Caucasian. Is that what it is? That's what he called himself. Yeah.
I don't blame him for not getting involved.
I'm not saying that I do. Okay. But now, Denny, as a veteran of so many years of playing team sports, we had a situation in the Giants-Bears game, which, of course, I watched, Giants-Steelers game, I'm sorry, on Monday night, where Alejandro Villanueva, who is a United States Army Ranger, had covered up the name of a black police shooting victim on his helmet. And instead, he put the name of a military vet who died. Okay. So the Steelers voted as a team that they were going to put the name of Anton Rose Jr. on their helmets with the Black Lives Matter thing. Villanueva surprised everybody by breaking ranks. He chose instead to write in the name of Alwin Cash, a veteran who was killed during the U.S. invasion of Iraq in 2005. Denny, what would that do to a team?
You know, I think we're beyond that at this point in time. I don't think we're having arguments in the clubhouse like they were having earlier and having team meetings and having union meetings. I think we're beyond that. I think everybody is just happy to be playing again. doing their thing, hitting guys, spitting on guys, whatever the hell is going on the field. But I just think they're beyond it now. Because you know what? I'm worn out with it, to be honest with you. And you know, I'm kind of a news junkie. I watch the news most of the, not most of the day, but a lot of the day. And lo and behold, I mean, I'm worn out. I mean, yeah, because every station you turn, no matter what it is, and depending upon what station, the slants and the views are just, you know, if you talk about one subject for an hour,
yeah, I know.
You got like 13 people who have 13 different opinions. Yeah. And then you say, I gotta go back.
Danny, everything you just said in the last 60 seconds is exactly what I just said in my point.
Yeah.
People are worn out by it. They're tired of it. They can go places to get that and find out what people are protesting or find out where people stand on social issues or find out whatever media bias there is. They can make that choice. They choose for 3.5 hours or 3 hours or 5 hours or if it's golf, 7 hours to get away from that because we're all worn out by this. We've been thrown in our face for 8 months. We're worn out. Sports, again, is an escape. And when it's thrown in your face, it's no longer an escape, and you just say the hell with it, and you turn it off.
And I'll tell you what else I'm worn out by, and I've said this so often on these shows since its inception. I'm worn out by hot chick, sideline female reporters who basically know nothing about football. They were just brought in because they're hot chicks. And these empty suits who run broadcasting think that we guys actually want to see hot chicks reporting on football instead of like ex-players who might know something about it. So yeah. Here comes in the Giants-Steelers game, ESPN's Maria Taylor. Isn't she gorgeous? God, she's beautiful.
Absolutely.
And she's wearing this low-cut, barely covering her breasts, amazing leather outfit that probably cost more than the gross natural product of New Guinea. And I turned to Lara and I said, does this chick think she's in a fashion show? And there's been a lot of hassle and controversy about what she wore since then.
Bob, do you remember one word she said?
No, of course not.
Well, and what Bob is alluding to is a radio host got fired
in Chicago.
In Chicago for suggesting that she should be doing. Didn't he say? Like
he took it way too far.
Yeah, he took it way too far, and he probably should have lost his job.
Yeah, insinuating she looked like a porn star.
Right. I mean, that was way too far. I don't know what the guy thinks he was doing, but the point. Yeah. You know, have you seen the Major League Baseball Network studio shows lately?
I don't watch. No.
Yeah. Okay. I've seen them.
Major League Baseball and all these women may be talented. I'm not saying they're not. They all wear tight, long dresses. All the guys they used to have there 5, 6, 7 years ago have been weeded out. Every female host on the Major League Baseball doing the highlights is wearing a tight dress.
It's ridiculous,
they
Fred.
They do a full body shot to make
it's
sure.
Ridiculous, Fred. I, you it's know, so you're telling me these empty suits think that I, as a viewer, you as a viewer, would rather watch some amazingly hot 26-year-old chick tell us about baseball than Denny McClain? Or than the guys that they got who played Major League Baseball for so long?
The sadness is that you and Denny and me and Brandon and Eli may not care, but I think a lot of guys would rather watch
I don't believe that for an instant. I think the suits think that young guy. Well, come on, man. We want to hear about look at there's Brandon. Brandon, 35 years, 36 years old. Brandon, join us. Would you please, our producer?
So here's the thing here. Now, if they did not have any of these women, they would be under fire for not having any women talent. Now,
then get an ugly girl.
Well, that's the thing, Bob. Now,
the Major League Baseball Network takes it too far, Brandon. I mean, have you seen this Heidi Watney? I mean, she's got a tight fitting dress on. The camera shot is a full body shot, so you can see the whole dress. But what are a lot of people saying? Boy, did that Heidi look hot today.
Well, she looks great, but that's another thing.
You don't care about the runs, hits, and errors.
Now, what's wrong with that, Fred? There's nothing wrong with that.
Let Brandon speak.
She's a woman. She wants to do her thing.
Go ahead, cut Brandon off, go ahead.
No, you're correct, though. Bob is correct. The thing is, you have to have a woman, otherwise you're going to get in trouble. However, it has to be a hot woman, because you never see any woman who is so-so. I mean, they're always smoking hot.
I'm going to counter that with Doris Burke. But other than that, you're right, Brandon, yeah.
Well, there's been a double standard. Any woman will tell you there's a double standard in society with that. I had a television career for 38 years. Denny's been on television. Nobody ever said we looked hot in a three-piece suit, at least that I know of, Denny.
Well, excuse me.
Well, they said that about me, though, and I had a very long television career, too. Freddie, give me a break here.
I'm sure they said that. I bet they sold darts, too.
But the point is, women, a larger woman stands way less of a chance of succeeding in that environment than a larger man. Okay, I had a pretty successful career. Having a pretty successful career, I've always had a weight problem. I don't think a woman could pull that off. That's a double standard. No, there's no question about it.
You're right.
I just
care
what people say and how knowledgeable and credible they are.
But I don't.
You do, but not the whole world does, Bob.
But you correct me if I'm wrong. I don't think, you know, you see a pretty girl on TV, she's going to be the host of the show and ask 2, 3, 4 different guys for their opinions on this or that. But do you really focus on her? I mean, don't you just kind of hear the first part of her question and let it go? I mean, I don't sit
while you're checking out her body, Denny, you're right.
Well, no, but I'm not sitting there checking out her body. I mean, listen, I'm insulted a little bit by the idea that a woman is hosting a football or a basketball or a baseball show. I am. I really am a little insulted because none of them have really played the game in the fashion that we're used to playing it. And that's the one thing. It's just like, listen, there's one other thing that all of a sudden we're starting to see. Female coaches in the NFL. I'm sorry. Listen, none of them have played left halfback. None of them played quarterback. Nobody got chop blocked as a woman. That's what I don't understand. And
I don't get it either.
I don't get it. I just
don't get it either.
You know, I'm going to dispute you a little bit on this, and not so much for the females, though I do stand up for their right to make a living.
I do too. I agree with you.
I've tired over the years of former athletes, and I haven't heard you say this before, saying he or she never played the game. I use the Joe Falls line, the late, great Joe Falls from years ago.
Denny hates him. Don't call him the late, great Joe Falls.
I understand that, but I've never died, but I can write an obituary, okay? The fact that you haven't played the game does not mean that you cannot analyze it or talk about it or be informative about it. I don't think having played the game is overrated.
But Denny's point is not talking about the game. It's about coaching the game, and I got a problem with that, and Denny does too.
I mean, it just doesn't make sense that these beautiful women, and I mean, even these girls who are now are on the NFL and coaching some of these teams, you know, they're beautiful women. And what's the first thing you look at? They got these. You're right, Fred, what you just said a little while ago. They got these tight pants on. They got this tight, that tight. And I mean, you know, it makes a great picture for the first few seconds, but I don't know how much they can share with an NFL player. I just don't.
Yeah, it's so many things are just out of control, and we trudge on just as the NFLs trudge on. Now, after laying that amazing egg, which we discussed on our Monday show, they go to Green Bay to face a Packers team on Sunday. Aaron Rodgers just lit it up last week in defeating ex-Michigan State star Kirk Cousins and the Vikings. You like the NFL's chances there. Now, listen to this. After the loss at Green Bay, they play at Arizona. They go up against the Saints. If they're going to start, I would think, wouldn't you? 0-4. Then they play at Jacksonville against what looks like a very mediocre, beatable Jaguars team, though they did defeat the Colts in their opener. What if the Lions were to lose that one and go 0-5? Now, Denny, are you convinced that Matt Patricia's a goner?
Well, I don't think he'll be gone this season. I mean,
that's what you've said.
I don't. Well, if he starts off 0-8, possibly, but I think the Lions family likes this guy for some reason. I think because his heritage, where he came from with Belichick, I think they think he's going to be able to pop the gun and get this team right on the right track. Listen, I picked him about 2 months ago to make the playoffs. That's how impressed I was with some of the players we got. Now, after the big choke and gag Sunday, and I mean, that was a choke and a gag. There's no other way to describe it. They didn't play the fourth quarter. They could have sat on the bench on their asses and just watched the rest of the game as the Bears ran over the top of them. So I don't know what's going to happen, but I know one thing. Green Bay scored 38 points last week, and they're not going to score any less against our defense.
Fred, you've been around the Detroit Lions, as the FLs as I call them, for a long, long time. What are your thoughts?
Well, my thoughts are, first of all, I think Matt Patricia is a bad fit. I think of all the Lions coaching hires and the blunders they've had, believe it or not, Bob, I think he's the worst one. I think he was the worst hire. I think there's a problem there between the players and Patricia and what he does to them and the way he demeans them. And he's brought in his New England Patriots mentality. And then even the other day when when somebody questioned why he would kick a field goal and give the Bears field position, he said, I was involved in one of the greatest calls in history on defense, meaning the Super Bowl game. I think, he meant the Patriots-Seahawks game, right?
Yeah.
Not the interception
Butler, right.
at the goal line. That's just
well, he was so the D typical. Coordinator, and maybe
so typical of his ego, though, Bob. At that point,
I don't know him.
Call out that I don't know him personally, but I know people who do and have dealt with him, and I know people on the inside of the Lions who have dealt with him, and it's not a pretty picture. Okay, I think his ego is out of control. I think the players can't stand the guy. Ask Darius Slay, who is a Pro Bowl caliber player who's now playing for another team. There are players that despise this guy. And let me just put it this way. No matter whether or when they fire him, they'll never have success under this guy of any long-term nature. I am completely convinced of this as I sit here.
You used to have me as a regular guest on your radio talk show in Lansing, Michigan. And whenever I said anything strong, you would go, Bob, tell us how you really feel. So it's my turn, buddy. Freddie, tell us how you really feel about Matt Patricia.
The guy has made a terrible impression in his time here in Detroit. And the best thing, and I am not of your nature, Bob. I am never, hey, let's fire the coach, okay?
No, you never him.
I've never
I don't
been
think
that
I've
way.
Ever really, well, go I don't generally say well, fire the coach, but go
I'm
ahead.
I'm not saying
go
you
ahead.
Have, but it's not my nature to say that. Right. And I'm saying from everything I've heard, and I'm not just talking about in the newspaper and hearsay, from everything I've heard about this guy in the inside, they have no chance to win with him. And the best move would be to move beyond the Patricia era. And it was a bad hire. It's still a bad hire. And they won't win with him.
I suggest to you, though, one thing. It takes 3 or 4 years for a football team, or most professional organizations at least, to turn it around. And he hasn't had that full term yet. But will he make it? I don't know. Because if he starts off, like we say, 0-5, 0-6, 0-8, it's going to be another torturous year. And there's no way they could bring him back.
As we say, boys, onward and downward. So we're going to talk about the Detroit Tigers when we come back from our little break here. And I want to tell you right now about Feldman Automotive, which is Michigan's number one Chevy dealer. They got 5 locations, Novi, New Hudson, Lansing, Livonia, and Highland. Feldman has 9 locations total. Also, Feldman Hyundai of New Hudson, Feldman Kia of Novi, Feldman's Dodge, Jeep, and Ram of Woodhaven. They are Michigan's number one pre-owned dealership. 2 Supercenter in Waterford, known simply as 1-800-PRE-OWNED. You buy a fully inspected and guaranteed pre-owned auto from Feldman. Then you relax with their exclusive drive it for 3 days, love it, or bring it back guarantee. And Feldman adds the unmatchable kicker with their exclusive guaranteed credit approval. You're going to find exactly what you want and exactly what you need at one of Feldman's 9 locations. You can also buy online at FeldmanAuto.com. Effortless, safe, hassle-free experience. So let Feldman earn your business and at the same time continue to support us here at No Filter Sports Podcast. And Power Home Solar is America's fastest growing solar energy company, and they're based in Metro Detroit. All of Power Home Solar's state-of-the-art panels also are made in America. With solar energy from Power Home, you're going to save money, you're going to help save our environment, and you're also going to help yourself avoid those costly and incredibly infuriating power outages. This is because Power Home Solar is now partnered with Generac, the nation's largest provider of in-home backup battery and generator systems. With Power Home Solar's panels and Generac, you'll be protected by a single, safe, sustainable solution for all your in-home energy needs. Yeah, you're going to lower your energy bills and eliminate power outages forever. Power Home also has financing starting at $99 a month. Call them at 1-800-POWER-90 and you'll save an additional $1,800 if you mention the show. So join the movement to solar and let the sun shine in, as the Fifth Dimension used to sing.
Yes, they did.
Yes, they did, while Denny played organ. And you're listening to the No Filter Sports Podcast. All right, boys, have at it. Tigers, who wants to take it away?
You know, let me start. Scoble yesterday pitched a second good game
Wednesday, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And had 8 Ks and 6 innings, didn't walk a guy. By the way, he's the second Tiger in history, to pitch a ball game of at least 6 innings and not walk a guy.
Is
I mean, it's hard to believe, isn't it?
No, it is too. That's impossible to believe.
As coming into the league. Yeah.
Coming into the league.
The last guy who did it was Schoolboy Rowe. Believe it or not, Schoolboy Rowe. Anyway.
Are you saying
did you ever pitch a game in your career where you didn't walk anybody?
Yeah, sure. A number of times. Oh, sure. Yeah.
Okay.
Are you saying just as a rookie? Is that the stat?
Yeah, Scott's kind of curious.
Okay. Okay.
Anyway, Kansas City wins 4-0. The kid Singer pitched a hell of a ball game for 6 innings. You know what? You can't even give him full credit for pitching as well as he did. You know why? What about the last 3 innings when the game really starts? I mean, listen, the name of Major League Baseball is the 7th, 8th, and 9th. And these kids don't know what that kind of pressure is anymore. Everybody's out of there at 100 pitches or 6 innings or 5 1/3. And the other guy is going to pitch tonight, Mize.
We'll including this Kansas City pitcher last night, who was the 19th pick overall in the first round. This guy's just eating Detroit up, and they lift him after, 6 innings? They could have been in trouble doing that. I don't understand what's going on with pitching these days, Denny. Maybe it's just a short season.
Maybe it's a short season. I think it is.
Kid's name was Singer, who was on the same staff in college as Alex Fajardo.
Yeah, at
one
Florida.
The Tigers prospect. What a rotation that must have been. No wonder Florida wins every game.
Five of those guys were first-round draft choices off that Florida team.
The silver lining on the Tigers, getting back to that, isn't their record this year. I actually have a friendly – well, more than a friendly wager. I have a dinner wager that they'll win 27 games this year. Jack Ebling here in town picked 24, so I win if it's over 26, and it's going to be right down to the wire. The point isn't their record of whether they get there. The point is that they are more entertaining to watch than they've been in the last 3 or 4 years. They have hope for the future now. You know me, I hate hearing about prospects, and I hate hearing about the hype for Casey Mize when he goes 4 innings and we want to award him a new contract, or at least what the public says. But I think with the young players they've infused in this organization and into the lineup, there is some hope for the future. I haven't felt that way the last 4 years. This is the first year that when the season ended, I'm going to feel like there's a chance that I don't know how good they'll be. I'm not saying that this is going to be like the early 60s Tigers when you were on and built a champion, Danny, but I think that they have a chance to make some noise with some of these young players. And I haven't seen, I've been so critical of the Tigers. We talked before, or last time I was on, about their last everyday player that they've groomed was Travis Freiman. Are you kidding me? I got a feeling with the center fielder now and the shortstop Castro and some of the young players they have, that they have a chance.
How about Candelario? How about Candelario? Is this the same guy?
I was ready to give up on him. I said he'll never hit major league pitching.
That's right.
That's exactly what I said.
He wasn't too good defensively either.
Major league pitching.
Right.
And here he is. He's having an unbelievable season.
Yeah, you know, the other two things I got to say quickly about the Tigers, I think it's time that Boyd is traded before he loses all of his value. He's so inconsistent right now.
Tuesday night.
Oh, for God's sakes, that's twice.
No, he lost 2-0.
Listen, he's got his brains. He's got an ERA, for God's sakes, of 8. That's close to begin with, right around 8.
But so does Schuble.
Let's not save a guy with an 8 ERA.
And Mize.
And the other thing, there's all kinds of rumors about the catcher of the future, this kid Rogers. And I made 2 calls this morning to somebody down at the Tiger Stadium or Comerica. And they say there's nothing wrong with him. He's just not handling
the
bat very well. He's not hurt. He's got no physical problems, but he just hasn't been able to hit the ball in play. So I guess they'll work. What they'll do with him is send him to winter ball someplace, and hopefully somebody will work.
I don't know. Then you got Grayson Griner. And you know, how about 3 cheers for one of our local boys? How about Eric Haas, who was called, acquired? He's from Westland, Michigan. A thrill it must have been for him on Wednesday night to make his Tigers debut.
They actually sent Griner out to the minor league base to make room for Haas.
That's where he belongs.
Griner has the Jake disease. He can't hit.
Well, I'll tell you. Go ahead, Fred.
These guys, they can be there's a lot of terrific defensive catchers at the minor league level.
Yeah, absolutely.
The big show is whether you can hit or not.
Yeah,
they can
exactly
all play
right.
defense. Most of them can throw. But for whatever reason, catchers can't hit anymore by and large. And that's the problem with Rogers. That's the problem with Griner. And that's the problem around baseball. Yeah. That's why you don't see stud catchers very many places like you did in the old days. I don't know what it's about.
Well, and the idea of going into your hometown to play the first time and pitching the first time is a monster thrill. Because I know when I went back to Chicago to pitch, it was just, I had, I must have 1,000 relatives in Chicago and 990 of them showed up at the ballpark. So,
How did you pitch?
I won 3-2.
Well, I have a lot of disagreements with Al Avila about things, and maybe I'm wrong and Al's right. I thought we had a catcher. I thought we had a really good catcher who could hit, and his name is James McCann. And Al didn't bother to honor him, to respect him enough to offer a contract, and he goes to the White Sox, becomes an all-star. And then they go out and sign a free agent to take his place. Go figure this stuff, huh?
Yeah, I think they missed it on McCann.
They sure did. Boy, he looked good from the first day he stepped behind
the
plate.
Why they let him get away is beyond me. It was, Couldn't agree with you more. And the proof is in the pudding. The guy is in the upper tier of catchers in baseball with the way catching is
right now. He is, yeah.
And they had him and they let him get away for nothing and they still haven't replaced him.
Yeah, and there's a certain thing that catchers do. If you can tell when a guy takes control of the game, and McCann, from the first day he stepped on the field, was in charge of the ball game. I thought he was good.
The whole thing is ridiculous. And now it's 4 against the dreaded gulp. Cleveland Indians. Oh no. The most interesting thing I found about watching the Tigers the last couple nights is now they have these cutouts in the stands behind home plate and everywhere. And for you folks who are big music fans out there, I know you've been online, you've been on the internet, and you've looked to see how and why the Beatles did the cover they did on Sgt. Pepper's. Fascinating stories about why certain historical figures were included. This reminded me of that. And I'm trying to make out the figures, and I said they want to honor the 68 Tigers. So in the front row, they got Willie, they got Mickey, and they got Freehand sitting there. I don't know, no Denny McClain, no Al Kaline. That was pretty interesting. Bo is in there, Izzo's in there, Jawan's in there, Lou and Tram are also there. Then and Mark Fidrich. Then if you want to honor the Detroit Pistons and the great teams they have, Zeke's got to be in there, obviously, at the top of the list. They got Ricky Mahorn and James Edwards sitting behind. I like to know how the Tigers figured out what cutouts to use. Do you guys have any information on that? Because I haven't seen any.
Well, I have information, but we only see what's on the television screen.
Yeah, that's
This is behind home plate. That's where your prominent figures should be. Am I right?
Well, yeah, that's a different point. Yeah,
yeah, I'll check into it.
They probably ought to put them within sight so we see Isaiah rather than James Edwards.
Duh.
I'll get that, but I'm not saying those guys aren't there. I don't know about all the cutouts.
Weren't they
reluctant to do this? Isn't this new?
Yeah, for a while.
Cutouts have just appeared here in the last couple of weeks, right, Brandon?
Well, I know that they've been offering them.
Yeah.
Yeah, right? they honored Ernie Harwell and Paul Carey, two of my all-time favorite guys. But now they got 3 Red Wings cutouts sitting up there. And I got my glasses on. I'm looking at the TV trying to see. The only one I could make out for sure was Proby. I didn't see Gord. I didn't see Alex Alvecchio. I didn't see Sawchuk. I didn't see Stevie Y. I mean, again, what's going on with this?
You guys have no answers,
I can tell.
I have no insight on that other than maybe they are there and they're out of the camera view. That's all I know.
Whoever picked them out, whoever that guy was, no one will ever know from this day forward unless we do find out. And we're going to get to the bottom of this.
So here we go, boys. NBA finals are all set now. Miami versus Boston, game 1 Thursday night. As always, the brittle Gordon Hayward is out, not playing for the Celtics. But there's a really good local Michigan angle from Miami with 3-point gunner Duncan Robinson out of the University of Michigan to start over the Heat. And don't forget Kendrick Nunn coming off the bench. He transferred from Illinois, where he got into some trouble there, and he went to Oakland University and had a great year under a great coach, Greg Campy, who's been terrific there. Denver versus the Lakers, game 1 Friday night. NHL Eastern Conference Finals, Islanders still alive. A double OT win Tuesday night against Tampa. Game 6 now is Thursday night, as we record this again on Thursday, with the Isles again facing elimination. They're down 3-2. Now, the winner is going to face the Dallas Stars. And Fred, I think you're a pretty big hockey guy. Danny really isn't. But I want to talk about for a minute Rick Bowness. Ricky's the Stars' interim head coach. He's now 65. a total journeyman as a player, and you Wings fans remember when Rick spent the entire 77-78 NHL season with Detroit, had a pretty good year in 61 games, and helped the team reach the playoffs. So he wanted to come back to the Wings, but they sold him to the Blues. Rick is a really good guy. He's a hockey lifer. He's been a head coach. You ready for this? He's been a head coach for the original Winnipeg Jets, the Bruins, Ottawa, the Islanders, and Phoenix, associate head coach with Vancouver. You talk about paying your dues. His career record is not good. 123, 289, and 51. But guys, how big a story after all of this dues paying in time would it be if Rick Bowness pilots Dallas to the Stanley Cup championship?
The majority of the United States doesn't even know there's a hockey tournament.
You're probably
going
right
on.
Unfortunately.
Right, period. I mean, yeah, we wasted 3 minutes of the show on hockey.
It's a waste, not in Detroit. Detroit's called Hockey Town for a reason.
20,000 in this town, a lot more people watch. But 20,000 people in each of those markets, 30,000 people in each of those markets enjoyed the hockey game. Yeah, Brandon, I see it. So bottom line is we wasted our time. But that's okay. Nobody's perfect.
Because Darren McCarty's coming on later in the show.
Right.
And there's going to be lots of hockey talk on that. I just can't believe Rick Bowness, who I remember vaguely as a player, is 65 years old.
Brandon needs to do something, Bob,
yeah.
Please.
He wants me to say goodbye to our radio audience, which is what we're going to do now. Thank you for listening to the No Filter Sports Podcast. And you guys go to the internet, to our website, hear the rest of the show. Okay, so what are you saying, Freddie, about
I'm just saying,
hockey?
If Rick Bowness is 65 years old, man, am I feeling old, and how must you guys feel? I remember him as a player, too.
Yeah.
And I didn't realize he had all that time in coaching. I do pay attention to hockey, but I didn't realize he'd been coaching that long. And you wonder if Steve Yzerman is debating a successor down the line for the Red Wings' current coach, Jeff.
Well,
Bratcher.
He blew it. Stevie blew it. You got a guy from Windsor, Joel Quenneville, is one of the greatest coaches in hockey. He becomes a free agent, and they let him sign with Florida instead of getting rid of Jeff Blashill and bringing him in. That's
how about Gerard Gallant, who played on the line?
Absolutely.
Gallant, I think, is a guy that Yzerman, I know they're great friends.
Yeah.
But
I suspect we'll do the U.S. Open after we do the
– after we bore you with the hockey talk, right?
Yeah.
You see, Freddie, this is what I go through. I got a guy from New York, Eli Zarrett, who, like most New York sports fans, has no interest in hockey, did not grow up with it. And Denny, even being from Chicago, no interest. Detroit is hockey town.
I follow the Blackhawks a little bit, but not overwhelmingly. That's all, you know.
I understand what you're saying about the hockey popularity in general, Denny. I do think it's different in Detroit in some markets.
It is. It is different here. But
that's why we have Darren McCarty coming on.
There's McCarty wrestling with Colbert right in front of a Hawk bench. Two guys who have great respect for one another. Now McCarty's going to throw it. He's got the left loose.
Here we go. McCarty and McCurley.
And now Darren McCarty gets his shots in at Claude Lemieux.
McCarty went right at Koser.
McCarty and Koser. And the big left from McCarty.
McCarty with that left hand loose. They're at center ice in the middle of the ring. Once he gets the left loose and starts throwing those haymakers, he can do some damage here.
We've been telling you folks a long time about Luke Nowacki of Pinnacle Wealth Strategies. He's been serving our listeners by creating financial plans, business plans, and trusts. Whether it's planning for future family obligations of your own or perhaps your retirement, let Luke's track record of success and decades of experience create a custom solution for both you and your business. Set your family up for life. You just got to call Luke. Here's the number, 248-663-4748. It's complimentary. You go see him, or these days, of course, you Zoom with him or Skype. And if you feel comfortable with what Luke's laid out for you, just let him do his thing. He's got a plan to fit your individual needs. Ethical, knowledgeable, caring. That's Luke Nowacki, Pinnacle Wealth Strategies. Again, 248-663-4748. Advisory services offered through Royal Alliance Associates. And interest rates, as I think you know, are at dramatic record lows. If you haven't refinanced your mortgage in the past few years, you're not going to find a better time than the present to call David Hall Mortgage. Dave has been part of the Detroit community for over 30 years. He built his business and maintained leadership in the mortgage market by consistently offering better options and more personal attention to thousands of satisfied clients. He's also sustained his leadership by providing the fastest service in the business, generally 3 or fewer weeks. And it's enabled Hall Mortgage to garner nearly 1,500 five-star reviews from Michigan homeowners just like you. So you go to DavidHallMortgage.com to get started, or I know you can remember this number, 248-308-5000. Easy. Hall Financial, lower payments, better options, more personal attention. And as I mentioned at the top of the show, it is United States Open weekend, right after United States Open weekend in this weird, wacky world. This time it's golf, of course. Here in the New York City area, fantastic course, Wingfoot. Denny is a golf wacko. You guys know that. And so is Fred Heumann. So, boys, take it away.
Well, as far as Wingfoot goes, I think I said in the last show that I played there a couple, three times. And I can tell you that it's the toughest course that I've ever walked on. And because of the rough, I mean, they've got three cuts of rough. And if you even hit it in the first cut of rough, you got a tough time making par. And if you don't hit the fairway, you're not going to make par normally 90% of the time. It is some golf course. And they're going to probably play it from on the back of the tees for 4 days. And that just makes it worse and worse.
Well, let me ask you a question then about that. Yeah. When you played it, it wasn't set up specifically for the U.S. Open.
No. Yeah, it was.
Open courses are always.
Oh, really? Okay. Actually, yeah, it was. I played there within 2 weeks each time of the tournament. So it was essentially because the members keep it like that for about a month after the tournament is played, because they all want to go out there and challenge the golf course as the pros did. And of course they get their brains beat out by each other.
Well, but how many over were you?
The first time I played, I was shot about an 80, and that's when I was really playing well. And the second time the second time I know I shot in the middle 70s, and the third time also in the middle.
That's 70s. Pretty impressive. Are you kidding me?
No, I could play. I could
only
really
eight
play
over. As we record this, I think Justin Rose is eight over. This is Thursday, yeah. And the leader right now is four under par. But I've heard people, Bob, say that, you know, as many as three or four over could win this thing.
Yes.
Is that possible?
Yeah.
Three or four over could win this tournament?
I said in the last show that the late, great Dick Schaap even wrote a book about when Hale Irwin won the U.S. Open at Wingfoot. He was seven over. That was the winning score at Wingfoot. He wrote a whole book about that. So now everybody is obviously picking Dustin to win this thing. Does Tiger have a chance?
Hang on a minute. The betting line. Let me give you the betting lines, and then you make the decision. Tiger is a 40-1 shot, and he has the most money bet on him as a 40-1 shot.
Interesting.
Dustin Johnson, of course, is the favorite. He's Mr. $15 million man, won the Federal Express money. Phil, listen to this. Phil Mickelson is a 75-1 shot, and some guy bet $45,000 on him to win the tournament. And if he wins the tournament, he gets $3.3 million, the guy who put up the 45.
And I know who that guy was. He's from Omaha, Nebraska. His name is Warren Buffett. And he doesn't give a damn.
No, it's not
$45,000 because he's going to lose it.
Yeah. I think John Rahm's the favorite.
Anyone who bets $45,000 bets it because they have it to lose.
They have
That's
it,
right.
Yeah. Walking right around that. Money for a guy with $45,000.
Okay, so big golf shots here. I have no prediction. Who's going to win?
You can't go against Dustin Johnson. He's hitting the ball straighter than anybody I've ever seen, longer than anybody I've ever seen. And he's a terrific sand player when he does hit a trap, and he doesn't hit very many. And as far as Mickelson goes, listen, he's out there playing the senior tour now. You know, he walked up and played his first one and won $1.5 million, $2 million, and he finished second or third in the next one. So he should be out there, but everybody would like to play in the Open. But I think Phil just took an extra spot away from a lot of people.
Freddie?
I find predicting winners of golf tournaments fruitless.
Yeah, of
very
course.
Tough.
But you know Johnson. What the best bet is in any golf tournament? Field.
Yeah.
Field.
Take the field. I'll say Justin Thomas. I got a feeling Dustin isn't going to win. I'm shaking my head on Tiger, not because I don't like him. I love Tiger. We've talked about this before, but he doesn't play enough to have a shot to win a major. And Mickelson doesn't. He plays enough, but Mickelson's not going to win it.
Right.
So those guys are just a blast from the past, and people like following them. Yeah. But I don't think Mickelson's going to win any more majors, and I probably don't think Tiger is either. You can't play once in a while.
Yeah, and by the way, this is the only major that Phil has never won. He's won the other three because at one time he was a great player.
And Denny, remember, this is why he didn't win the U.S. Open, because he messed it up here in New York.
Himself.
So he was, I'm such an idiot, was the quote.
That's when he said, I can't believe what an idiot I am.
Yeah, I know that. Yeah. My only issue with Dustin Johnson is I don't know that he's hungry enough, because he already has a much bigger reward than any U.S. Open could bring him. He goes home to Paulina Gretzky.
He goes home to
Don't, you know, once you get that kind of money, you don't look at the money.
No,
you,
I'm kidding.
You always look at the money. But the U.S. Open, you got your name there forever. And that's what he wants.
Give me John Rahm all day long. John Rahm is my pick.
Okay. We'll see what happens.
Well, those are the three popular picks. DJ and John Rahm and Justin Thomas. Those are the top three. And even though I picked Justin Thomas, I don't know who it'll be, but I got a feeling it'll be something out of Bob's field that comes up and wins this thing.
Maybe.
I think it'll be part of the field, whether it's Reed, Rick, whether Patrick Reed or whoever it is. I think somebody like that will come and win this tournament, but I have no idea.
So you think it's one of the 144 players, huh?
Well, maybe not the bottom 50, but somewhere in the 4 to 50 range, maybe. That's my field.
Fred, it's so delightful to have you here with us.
Yeah, you've been fun,
so many
Fred.
Reasons. And here's one of the reasons, Freddie. You're relaxed and you're calm. You're not going to rush me through the mailbag. I know you're not going to rush me through the mailbag. As somebody else who shall remain unnamed usually does. There we go, folks. Want to remind you that you can get in touch with us whenever you want. You can tweet us at Eli Zarrett, at MU2Denny, or at Bob Page Sports. Fred, what's your Twitter handle?
I think I'm still where I was at Channel 6. I'm at Uncle Fred 6.
Okay, good. So you don't even use Twitter, obviously, pretty much.
I use it, but when I left Channel 6, I didn't change it. So I still think it's at Uncle Fred 6.
Last show we had, the very entertaining Bill Shearer and Daniel Lee Emery comments. Great interview. Always love to hear from the 84 Tigers. D Champ Green says, another good one. Loved it with Billy Shearer. I think you guys got three questions in. No, thank you, because he's kind of like the Dick Vitale of baseball. Yeah. Robbie Silverman, big friend of the show out in Phoenix, says another great episode with Bill Shearer. Considering his success with the White Sox, maybe he'll be offered a GM spot somewhere. He definitely has more personality and vigor than someone we know who is the general manager in Detroit. And Tiger Mike 1975 says, I need your mailing address for the show so I can send Eli Zarrett and Denny McClain some Lions pom-poms. What slappies? Bob, I can't believe Eli and Denny both gave you a hard time and that they both think the Lions are actually improved after 1 week. It made me laugh and it made you swear. Did I swear, Brandon? Maybe I did. I don't know. I must have been really pissed off to do that. Website submissions, folks, asknofilter@gmail.com. And I want to thank listener Jack Morrow for sending us a very interesting article on the NFL attempting to field a team in Buffalo in 1940. Now, listen to this. The Chicago Cardinals, and they were still playing Chicago when I was a boy, and Denny, of course, was growing up
there. We had two teams.
They played at Wrigley Field. Yep. The Chicago Cardinals played a September regular season game against the Lions in Buffalo. Future U.S. Supreme Court Justice Whizzer White played for Detroit. He didn't have a good game. Nobody else did either. What was called one of Buffalo's worst electrical rainstorms ever ruined it. 18,000 turned out. They say 10,000 stayed till the end of a 0-0 tie. A genuine cloudburst accompanied by lightning, and they played through it?
Yep. Look, you know what he was back in those days, they did.
Yeah, they did. Ed Odovan is a sports correspondent for Japan Forward. I'm not going to get into too much about this because most of you people do not know who Jerry Eisenberg is, one of the great sports columnists in America for many years with the New York Star Ledger. Just want to let you know, for those of you listening there, if you're interested in Jerry's career, Ed has a new book, a collection of interviews coming out with him, 5 years worth, and it's going to coincide with Jerry's 90th birthday coming up on September 10th. Thank the great Jerry Green in Detroit. Two very similar guys at similar ages. Jerry is now 92. Ooh, Jeff Schroat Whites. Wow, somebody who may or may not partake in the hippie lettuce enjoys some reggae? No way. Eli just needs to crank some Marley up before the podcast and lighten up. Spark up, Zarrett. You're harshing our mellow. Bill Michelli, I'm not sure we've heard from Bill yet. Enjoy, you guys. Great guests and a fun show. I met Eli and Denny when they did a few short interviews with fans for their TV show back in 92, when they visited the then newly opened Sky Dome. You guys went to Toronto then. And did
we were there the night that the couple was doing the shtick out in center field.
You mean through the window?
Oh, yeah, behind the windows. And they thought,
behind the windows. They turned the lights off, and the lights from the ballpark shine right in the room.
You saw that live?
Well, we were there that night. We couldn't believe what we were looking at.
So now what you're also doing.
And I'll never remember the score of the game, but I know I was fixated in center field.
So now you're interviewing fans, you and Eli are, for your show. And you interview this fan, Bill Michelli. And on his clip, He said how Bo Schembechler was screwing things up so bad for the Tigers, he had switched his allegiance to the Blue Jays. The Ernie Harwell firing, his drill sergeant ways, his running down Tiger Stadium. What a dumbass. Was there a worse Tiger era than the Bo era, PR-wise and team-winning-wise? It was bad. You know, I've heard Bo called a lot of things. Dumbass would not be one of them.
Well, Bo just would not listen to the baseball people. And, one of the first things Bo said is when he came over to take the job, was, I know nothing about the game. And then he went down and tried to tell some of the kids who were taking batting practice what to do with their hands. And everybody said, Bo, we don't hold anybody here. We don't push anybody here. We hit with our hands.
Yeah.
And that was the end of that.
He miscalculated on the Ernie thing, which wasn't his call, but he supported it. And then he got so mad at Ernie for calling the press conference. Those two died as enemies. Okay. Yeah, I don't know many Ernie Harwell enemies, but they died as enemies.
I don't know any except Bo.
Bo did not like Ernie for doing that. Yeah. But to be square with you, Bo did upgrade. He did bring the Tigers into the modern era. They were prehistoric with their conditioning. He brought in a conditioning guy. He upgraded their facilities in Lakeland. He upgraded the weight training. So if he did nothing else, he brought the Tigers into the current era in that regard. Now, whether he can make baseball decision, and he certainly didn't make a very good decision on the announcer, but Bo was not a complete failure with the Tigers. And Tiger Stadium, by the way, which I love like my grandmother, but she eventually died at 101. Tiger Stadium was prehistoric too. It was falling apart and it needed replacement.
Yeah, you're right.
Bo was right about that. And I love Tiger Stadium.
Yeah. I'll say this though. I was back from New York. I don't know if I was doing a game or visiting, and Bo at that time had his own little private suite downstairs. So of course I'm going to go downstairs and say hi to the old man. So I sit down with Bo. Bo is picking my brains about the players on the field. What do you think about this guy? Do you think that guy's a good second baseman? That's how far behind he was on baseball. When you go to a dumb reporter and start asking him questions about games.
Fred, then he should have been a superintendent, because he was the worst general manager, president of a ball club. The history of baseball will never see another Bo. He was terrible, just terrible. And it was just awful the way the office created this negative feeling towards him. And thank God he walked away finally.
Up next is Howard Bosworth. Dear Eli, Denny, and Bob, great show time in and time out. I love the banter, the insight, the interviews. I listen while I run in the morning, and I'm frequently while I'm running, I just burst out in laughter listening to you guys. Really appreciate your vast experience, wisdom, and good common sense. Keep up the great work. Thank you, Howard. So nice of you to say. You guys can call us, text us, leave a message. The number is 760-89-BALLS. And here's unnamed texter. Listen to this. If I had been asked Sunday to script what would be the most fitting game to welcome a future Hall of Famer and noted child abuser to what it's like to actually be part of the Detroit Lions, I'm not sure I could have invented it any better than what unfolded Sunday in the Lions game. Absolutely perfect. All I got to say is this. I think part of this is BS. I don't like it when people refer to Adrian Peterson as a child abuser. He spanked his kid with what used to be called the switch, and that used to be common. Denny, I bet you had corporal punishment. Freddie, you did too. When I was a kid, if I did something bad, my parents had, you remember those wooden paddles they had with the rubber ball attached with a string? They cut the string off, and they spanked my butt, and it hurt. But you know what? I knew I'd done something wrong.
My dad had a leather belt. And when you saw that leather belt come up from his waist, you knew that the poop was about to hit the fan.
My dad hit me with a leather belt, too.
Mine was a bar of soap. My mother had a bar of soap.
To wash your mouth out.
She'd wash my mouth out. Yeah. And I can't think of anything worse. These are different times. We'd all get sued if we did this now.
Yeah, there's no question about that. In this PC era, you've seen this, I know you have. Some kids actually called their parents by their first names.
Of course.
They call adults by their first names. And when any kid does that to me now, I say, no, my name is Mr. Page. It's not Bob. You have to explain this to the parents. Spare the rod and spoil the child. And I never messed up again after I got spanked for being bad and being a jerk.
Yep.
Right? So here's Ryan from Novi, Michigan.
Is this going to be the last one, I hope?
Yeah, you're tired.
You sound like Eli now, Denny.
Yeah, he does.
This is way too many, Bob.
Second to the last one, Denny, and okay. I got one for you to close. Denny always likes it when they're specifically tailored to him.
No, Denny
Ryan from Novi is bitching about a Denver-Miami NBA Finals, Dallas Stars-Tampa Bay Lightning, which Denny already bitched about. He doesn't like it. We're going to be interested to see the TV ratings on the NBA and NHL Finals. And here's your friend Ty Emelander, who's back with us this week, and he says, Denny has known me for many years, and he knows I do not condone the use of the F word. I've heard Bob and Eli argue many times about Bob calling the Lions the FLs. Sunday, I changed my mind. Eli, you need to embrace the FLs like I will from now on. Thank you, Bob. See, the mail makes fun, Danny.
I don't know why all the uproar over the Lions lost Sunday, because you hear it here locally, of course. We're all old. Haven't we all seen that game 600 times?
Yeah.
Why are people surprised?
Freddie. Come on. The coach.
We've seen that game.
Freddie, all the guy. Come on, Freddie. Stop it. All the guy had to do was run the ball three times and kick it away. The Bears would have used all their timeouts, and the game was over with. It was the worst job of coaching in the last couple of minutes of a football game I've seen in years. I can't remember a game any worse coach than what he did on Sunday.
And with that, now our very special guest, folks, you're going to love this interview.
Darren McCarty comes back with Neiman in front of him. McCarty draws. McCarty in. McCarty scores! A magnificent goal! Darren McCarty! Can you believe this goal by Darren McCarty? Move over, Mario. Here I come.
Darren McCarty scoring the Stanley Cup winning goal against the Philadelphia Flyers, one of the most famous in the long and storied history of the Detroit Red Wings in 1997. So a member of the Wings' fabled grind line, McCarty, and you Detroit folks know all this about Darren, but he took on the role of enforcer most of his career, a role in which he won the Cup four times with Detroit, the last of which in 2008 after resurrecting his career in the Red Wings minor league system. Now, you want to talk about an interesting man? McCarty's father, Craig, was diagnosed with multiple myeloma, an incurable cancer of the bone marrow and blood in 1995. So in 97, Mac established the McCarty Cancer Foundation to raise funds to fight that disease. During the offseason, he's been the lead singer for the hard rock band Grindr. He's an author. McCarty's autobiography, My Last Fight, The True Story of a Hockey Rock Star, has been out. He has his own podcast. He's on WJR in Detroit. Mac credits marijuana with helping him overcome his alcohol addiction years back, and he now has a legal marijuana business in Michigan. Spent most of his childhood right near Detroit in Leamington. We, as kids, used to listen to Cheer Radio all the time. Half of the area, Wings fans, half Leafs fans. Darren McCarty, welcome to the show. Which were you growing up, a Wings or a Leafs fan?
Oh, my gosh. I can't believe you'd even ask me that question, because I bleed red and white. All my life. April 1st, born April 1st, 1972, which, by the way, for all of you Michigan people here, was the first hash bash in Ann Arbor, was the day I was born, which is some epitome. But I grew up bleeding red and white. I'm an April birthday. I'm a Firestone. My power color's red. The best thing I ever did when I was 10 years old, because my cousin, who is like my brother, Chad, was a Toronto fan, that we made a $100 bet who would win the Stanley Cup first. And the fact that I scored that game winning goal, I made him pay me $200. So no matter what happens from here on out, I'll still win money. Cause now he's got the Leafs and I got the Lions, and it doesn't look good, but I'll still be up 100. So always a Red Wing fan, diehard Red Wing fan. And why could I be? Because they were the Dead Wings at the time. Because I had the Tigers, man. I had Lance Parrish and Gibby and Tram and Sweet Lou and those
Darren,
guys.
Before your time, I coined that nickname on Channel 7 in Detroit, the Dead Wings. I had it fonted over my shoulder back in the 70s when I would give the scores. I never got any money out of it, though.
Well, you know what? That's because you should have. It's called branding. Yeah.
Branding.
Yeah, this branding in 2020 is a little different than in 1975. So it's all right.
I actually started covering the Red Wings in Detroit for WDIV and WJBK when Darren came up after the Dead Wing era. And Darren, I do remember your first practice coming in from the minor leagues. I remember interviewing you your first practice, and your grin was so wide. I don't know if you remember that first day you came up, so wide, because you had followed Gordie Howe and you dreamed of being a Red Wing. You must have idolized Rob Probert, and you played with him for a couple of years, didn't you?
Absolutely. Listen, look at me and whatever it is, ups, downs, highs, lows, but I've always, what I ever wanted to be was a hockey player, play for the Detroit Red Wings, and knowing the history and indulged in the history from the Gordie Howes and the Ted Lindsay's, the Bill Gadsby's, the Blackjack Stewart's. I knew all this, the history. It's sort of like I can appreciate in the way Dylan Larkin growing up being, you know, the Red Wing, the next, you know, obviously the current Red Wings, but growing up in Waterford and being around it. So to be able to go into that dressing room, I mean, I'm a kid in a candy store. It was like a dream come true. I never worked a day in my life, and to be able to be around, you know, this, to see the Steve Yzermans, and then to be able to be friends and, you know, Bob Probert, who guys that I idolized, and to be in Joe Louis Arena, that I'd been there in the stands. You know, I was going to games when you could get in the rink for $5 and you'd be on the glass in like 2 minutes. I'd be mad because I didn't know that I was 12 years old and I couldn't win a car. But I didn't know why. I was like, Mr. Ilitch, you're going to buy me a car one of these days. He bought me a few, so we're good.
I remember the quote from the locker room in 97, the first of the four cups that you were fortunate to be a part of. To me, that'll always be one of the glorious days in Detroit sports history, is that night, a Saturday night, when the Red Wings won their first Stanley Cup and snapped the 42-year drought. And Darren stood up in the locker room and said, you can take that 42-year itch and shove it up your ass. Remember that, Darren?
I absolutely do, because sick and tired of hearing about it. And that's the whole thing. If you don't like the way things are done, then you got to do something about it. You can't really sometimes do it yourself. You need a group of people to do it together, and that's what we had, and that's what we created. And Fred, you were there. I mean, I remember I was looking at pictures for some reason, and I see you in the dressing room and Ray Lane and all and you got to understand, this is the old crappy Detroit locker room where it was nothing like it was. So it was literally 120 degrees and nobody cared, and it was one of the greatest nights. And I think that now, because it's 23 years later, I know my grandma was there, my dad was there, and people that were there that we've lost. I know that, you know, I have a picture with two of my best golf buddies who are no longer with us, but I'll always have that to cherish. So it started something that I think, for all you, all us Red Wing fans out there, culturally, that's where it began. We were able to do something, but the culture's back. And that's bigger than wins and losses to me. It's about doing it right and doing about the things we're talking about, whether it's the evolution from Bob creating the Dead Wings to Fred, you and I telling 42 years of kiss their ass to right now today.
Well, there's another thing, too. Had you played the 60s, you would have really saw what a bad-looking locker room was. I can guarantee you that. We had an air conditioner, but it blew out hot air almost every day. And the hot water only produced itself for about 30 minutes every time we had a ball game. So we had we went through the same thing. And, you know, listen, they all did the right thing, built new parks, gave us plenty of room. God, you could even park a car around the ballparks and the hockey rinks and everything else now. So it's not so bad anymore. The tell us, before we continue this look down historical lane, give us an idea what you're doing now. And we know WJR, but you're also involved in some businesses.
Well, I do. So there's a lot of different things. And you know what? I wear 11-11 proudly on my wrist, because that's my sobriety day, 2015. And
good for you.
And exactly. And what I always say is about cannabis. It's not about whether you do or you don't. It's, do you know that you have an option? Right? Because I never knew that I had a choice. And if I didn't have a choice and it wasn't for this plant, I wouldn't be here. And that's through my journey, through alcoholism, through insomnia, different things like that. So it's my education that has brought me to the point where I'm at, that I created the Darren McCarty brand of cannabis, which is in collaboration with Pink Canna, which is the largest seed to sale distribution here in the state of Michigan. So I'm proud of building that. But I also have Grind Time with Darren McCarty. I also do a Wrestling with Sports podcast with Dimitri Young and Jason Kendall. And Dennis Farrell. Yeah, because here's the common denominator about two former baseball guys and a hockey guy is that we all love wrestling and we go in it, but we talk about all different stuff. So to me, it's I'm involved in the Athletes for Care, the Puck Support Foundation, which is the Athletes for Care, all the athletes from all former walks of life, from any sport, you know, guys like Mike Tyson, guys like Jake Plummer, sure. Jim McMahon. We're Athletes for Care, where it's we're out and about. We just came up. There's been a in Congress, I'm part of a brief that's been put forth about decriminalizing the cannabis, just good because of the medical and of the environmental. You know,
and recreational. It can be fun, man. You know,
right. You think weed, you think recreation. I think weed, I think sleep and moving on. But it's okay because it's for everything. And the bottom line is, doesn't matter how you use it, you're not going to die. So when you get educated, and this leads me to tell me the who, not the what, right? It's just like anything else. And it's all education. So between that, you know, doing a ton of golf, doing a Darren McCarty Slapstick Comedy Tour. So I'm back traveling around Michigan. I'll actually be in Columbus, Ohio, and in Toledo on the 4th and the 8th of October doing my Slapstick Comedy Tour. So I've been doing that for a couple of years to go around. And like I tell everybody, listen, just because I have a band, I'm not a musician. So please don't call me a comedian. What I am is an entertainer.
And
I'll
listen,
be out there and I'll entertain you.
And listen, I play piano organ. So we got to hook up. We got to do something together sooner or later. You know what I mean? But one other thing.
Absolutely.
I'll let you go. Tell me, there's no connection between alcoholism and cannabis.
What do you mean?
One doesn't.
No connection.
So the alcohol doesn't lead
it
to cannabis.
It helped him cure his alcohol addiction, as I said.
Oh, absolutely. No.
It does?
Opposite. All the stuff about gateway and all this that alcohol is the biggest gateway drug there is, right? The cannabis, right. Get educated, because here's the one thing, right? When I tell you, as common sense, that did you know that anything with the spine, right? Anything with a spine has an endocannabinoid system, which means that this plant, this cannabis plant, you have a food processor. So with over 500 properties in it, all you have to do is get it into the processor. Now you get it in there educationally, it'll go to where it needs to go. Pain, sleep, appetite, whether you're talking recreation for the THC or the high everybody's worried about, that's for your head. For all of us that are OCD, ADHD, mental concussions, all that stuff. The rest of it's for your body. The rest of it's as to the health and wellness if you worry about putting it in. So absolutely, there's no correlation between one going to the other or anything like that.
Let me ask you this.
One thing is, here's the thing. Right. When you come to me, is that you can be, what do you mean by that, all day long? Because it's the education. And the thing is, you go on your own journey. I can tell you things, you don't do the work, because it's a personal thing. I know what I need to do for me. Now I can help somebody along if they want to be, what do you mean by that? And a lot of the reason and a lot of the thing is, what I don't want is anybody to get to the point that I did, because nobody's going to ever survive. You're going to end up being dead without knowing the truth that there is an option. So you look for Darren McCarty brand with your questions.
All right. Well, what I was going to say was that Eli and I are both children of Woodstock, the Woodstock generation. So for us, believe me, this is nothing new. You had all kinds of problems with us because of the Neanderthal attitudes in hockey and in sports at the time. You used to try to beat tests. You once used synthetic urine. You broke a testing machine and you were fined $20,000 by that for the National Hockey League. So now you're playing for a guy like Scotty Bowman, the older generation. They must have known you were smoking dope every night. Did Scotty ever call you in?
Stop, get it. If you're gonna get it right, get it correct. Because I did not start smoking weed until I was 27 years old after sport hernia surgery after the 2099 season.
Fine.
Bob. You're going to listen for a minute, because when they give you all the opiates and everything else for your surgeries and you can't sleep to begin with, and it messes you up, and somebody says to you, which you've grown up, right, where you're either a jock or you're a stoner. You can't be both. You can be friends with them, but you can drink all you want, But as long as you don't touch weed or anything, because then you'll never be. That's the Neanderthal idea. So Scotty, but no, nothing as far as that, because it wasn't until I was in and I found the secret that I myself up with, because I'd found something that worked for me, that all this other stuff that I didn't want. The bottom line is, what did I go back to always? Alcohol.
Right.
No matter how many times happened, because I couldn't dichotomy it. But I did not smoke until I was 27 years old after my first sport hernia surgery. So that is important know, because I come, and if you do the history, do the education of Ricky Williams and why he got out of football, is because cannabis was bigger in his life, and he knew it, than the ulcers that he got at playing at the University of Texas because of all the, you know, aspirin and all the stuff that he'd taken. So it's one of these things, and this is 20 some years ago. So I'm f***ed up with knowing that there's something there that can keep me, that can keep me off of the booze, right? But I can't go back and forth because it's not there. So that's the fight that I always had.
Darren, you've heard athletes in recent times, actually, including Dak Prescott, talk about depression in their lives and become very public with it. I know that you dealt with that firsthand, didn't you?
Absolutely. 100 million percent. Suicide, depression, all that stuff. You know, the one thing, and I apologize, because if you know me, I'm adamant about, like, you got to get it right, the story right. That's the reason I wrote the book, is because, listen, enjoy my truth. So whenever I'm going to talk, I always stand behind what I said. Now, I can change my mind if you give me some information that I'm not afraid, you know, to say different stuff like that. But depression's real. And just because people think that, what, you made some money or somebody paid you once or something like that, that life's easy. No, life's hard, and we're all human beings. What you do for a living isn't who you are. You know, and that's the whole thing. So the fact that there's something out there that we can all converse about that works with your system to help all this depression, especially in 2020 with this COVID. And I mean, think about, like, for 6 months, one of my lines that I joke is, hey, what's the biggest thing that Darren McCarty learned during COVID? Well, I learned I had an introverted side. Who'd have known, right? Because I had to spend time by myself. You're forced to. Yep. I mean, I'm a guy who's always out on the go, whether it's here, there, everywhere, whether it's a charity thing, whether it's, you know, doing cannabis stuff, whether it's doing stuff, I'm always on the go. And to have to shut down and go to lockdown for 6 months, that really helped me out, Fred. But if I wasn't on my fifth year into this journey, to know the signs and have the communication and the skills that I've developed, right? That's the whole thing. The biggest thing out of all of this is that when guys get done, and it doesn't matter when it is, and it doesn't matter what level you played at, is that there's a void, right? Because you don't know what you're supposed to do, who you are, as far, if you don't have a routine and you don't have a strong core around you. Right. A lot of guys do. And then they're successful. But a lot of guys don't, because, you know, for whatever reason. So I just want to be somebody that has lived it, that has gone through it, so people don't have to go through the same things that I did, whether it's depression, no matter what it is.
Yeah.
You know, that's all it is. So when it's, and what's adamant is, I hate my heart virtue, which is one of the things, right? When you go to 4 rehabs, and the league spends about $1 million on you, whether you stay sober or not, you do learn the lessons. So my heart virtue, which makes me tick, is vulnerable truth with integrity. So when the vulnerable truth is off, hence we just saw, my dander vigors and then we hence back to March 26th. But so Bob, to answer your question, I never had a conversation about cannabis with anybody in the Red Wing organization.
Interesting.
It was always alcohol.
You played for the Belleville Bulls in junior. Captain of the team, 91-92. You scored 55 goals.
55
with 72,
goals
with
in, 72. In 65 games.
That's right. So here's, now he's drafted by the Wings. He scores 19 goals for his best season with the Wings. All right. We have recently had Polo on the show. We had the Grim Reaper on him on himself very recently, Stu Grimson. These guys were never great players. So I want to ask you, Darren McCarty, what makes a guy like you, who obviously can play, who obviously can score goals, become an enforcer, and did you like that role?
Cog in the wheel, bro. You know, just be a cog in the wheel. Meek is, give me, I want to be a part of a team. You know, there's different cogs in the wheels, right? Mine's a four Stanley Cup, gold plated, as bling bling as you get cog. Like, you look at the Red Wing machine, I'm there. You know I'm there, but I'm a small piece of the puzzle. Why? I want to win. I'm not about individual stats. The best part, you know what the greatest part about my last year in juniors winning the 55 goals is that Kirk Maltby scored 50 that year, right? So I own, and when you ask Maltz, you go, hey, Maltz, you had 50 in junior, great year. And he will say, yeah, but Mac had 55, because I have him trained to know that. That's the greatest part. Other than the team stuff, because I knew, like you said, growing up, remember, I'm a Wings fan, right? Die hard. I know what this team needs. I know that they need me. They need a younger, they need help for Proby. They need a young gun. I always just wanted to be that little dog that just, you know, went out and I got big
like
dogs
it? Did,
behind
did,
me.
Did you like fighting?
I loved it. Until they put in the tie down rule. Until they put the tie down rule in, because I could get out of my jersey and it was like Hoist Gracie fighting with a gi. Right? It was it was part that I could fight bigger guys because it was technical. So after, no, when big guys can grab you by your jersey and they're twice your size, that's not fun when you can't move around.
Right.
So I enjoyed it when it was a means to an end, because I knew that I was important, and not to score goals, but in order for the goal scorers to be able to score goals.
Darren McCarty's with us, and DMAC dropped that date, March 26th, a couple of times. For the people that don't follow hockey real closely that are watching or listening, March 26th is the night that Darren beat the hell out of Claude Lemieux, who turtled.
Freddie, I've never thanked Darren personally for that, because I covered that puke, and I saw Lemieux one time in a scrum bite an opponent. So I want to thank you for beating the daylights out of Claude Lemieux. Nobody ever deserved it more.
That was a year later retaliation for what he did to his buddy Chris Draper, and it turned the whole season around. It's probably as significant as the night they won the Cup. I think Darren or any Red Wing will tell you that. And Darren, you've played some charity hockey games in recent years alongside Claude Lemieux, and I'm curious, do you guys even talk?
Yeah, well, here's the thing. Here's the story. 2011, it was the day after St. Paddy's Day, which is not a really probably the best idea, but TSN in Canada decided to have off the record with Michael Landsberg, me and Claude meet for the first time. Really? I was drinking, so I was hungover, and you got to drive to Toronto hungover. You're not in a good mood. So I call it like I see it. And I was very like standoffish, because you have to earn my respect. I don't respect him as a player. I do respect him as a man. And we've done autograph signing. He signed that picture of him turtle. People have that. I mean, I would never do that, but I call it like I see it. As a man, I have respect for him. We could go to dinner, go golfing, but as a hockey player, no. He does that stuff again, and the same thing happens. My favorite part is actually, and it just so happens to be also another 11-11-97, is when off the opening draw of the ESPN game, where I tongue-lashed him up and down, and then he just Drapes won the draw, and he blasted me, and I remember going, okay, good, he's going to fight this time. So that was fun that time, because I got to tee off on him.
Why did you fight Joey when Joey went to the Rangers? What was that like?
Oh, dude, people ask me, who's the toughest guy you ever fought? And I said, well, you know, my first year, Joey Kosher with the Rangers, it's in the corner, and Joe, and I'm a lefty, and it's the only time I squared off right-handed, because the only thing more powerful than Joey Kosher's right hand is Thor's hammer. So I swear off, he throws a punch, I duck, he takes a piece of my helmet off. We ended up in a headlock. We both hit our heads on the ice. He looks at me, he goes, you all right, kid? I looked at him and said, thanks for not killing me, Mr. Kosher. It's a good thing you didn't, because a few years later, the biggest thing to get us over the hump was Brendan Shannon with Can Acquisition, Larry Murphy, and Joey Kosher. He's the papa to this day. He's still one of my closest friends, and he's a president of the alumni. So
listen, before you want to hook up with a certain guy, if the poop hits the fan.
Well, you want to make sure that your top guys are paired off with their top guys.
Oh, I see.
So as long as your Lidstrom and your Eiserman and your Fedorov are over there having a conversation with their sackics or their, you know, where they're paired off, but they're not in the heat of it.
Right.
Let the guys take care of it. It's when there's an uneasy. That's why you go back to the one that sits in my mind. I wasn't even there, but Buffalo Sabres, Kevin McGuire, their tough guy, ends up squared off with Steve Yzerman. You saw Bob Probert lose his mind.
Yeah, no, you don't do that.
And finding, no, like that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
You will, but we will, like, we'll go in the dress room after. You can't do that. Yeah. That's our guy. So usually when things popped off, you know, you'd have a partner, and it'd be usually a guy you fought in junior, whatever. So you knew what you were up against, and maybe at that time he had a bad hand or something. So you know, there's respect there along the lines. Yeah. Maybe not tonight. You give him a break, and
that's what Stu Grimson writes about in his very interesting and entertaining book. I'm sure you must have fought him. Besides Joey, who was the toughest guy you ever fought, and why?
See, the guys, like Tony Twist, you know, for me, right, I'm a bleeder, but I got hit with a baseball bat between the eyes when I was 11 years old and didn't knock me out or whatever. So I got a cement head. All right. Now I can take a punch. I realize that. I tell everybody it's a lot easier taking a punch when you see it coming. So, but it's the guys you don't want to fight, like the Tony Twist, the Dave Browns, you know, the Joey Koshers, the guys that can end your career in one punch.
Yeah.
The guys you like to fight were the ones that, you know, like the Marty McSorleys that weren't going to hurt you, maybe get a black eye or cut you, but you can stand in there and it'd be more of an endurance test. A lot of the times guys' styles, you know, like back in the day, you'd look at the lineup and you didn't only have to worry about, oh, I got to get the puck out and this is the breakout and this is what we're doing. But also too, I got to, he throws right-handed, he throws left-handed, he likes to get it over with early, he doesn't like to go long, or what, you know, like, you got to break down, like, six guys, eight guys on the other team, just in case, you know, you run into them, you know what you're going to expect, so there's a lot, too, and that goes back to Fred's, you know, anxiety, depression, stuff like that. How can you not? You got to be a prize fighter, UFC fighter, and a hockey player. Same time.
Yeah, and we did the same thing in baseball. We protected K-Line. We protected Jimmy Northrup. We protected Willie Horton. I mean, whenever one of our guys got knocked down, somebody was going to wind up with 128 saves in their ass.
The game has really changed in just the brief period that you haven't been playing, Darren, to the point where obviously we're seeing less fighting. They're trying to move away from that. We still see it from time to time.
The instigator penalty, thanks to Bettman.
But to me, it seems to be the speed. Everything seems to be a dump and chase. I tend to remember the Red Wings and a puck possession and what the Russian Five would bring and how the Soviets had that. Now it kind of seems like it's just throw that puck, go. Fastest guy gets it. That's how we're going to play hockey these days. Do you think a lot of guys that you played in your area just wouldn't stand a chance in today's game because of the speed?
Yeah, I wouldn't play.
Oh, really?
No. It's too fast. You know, the game's different because now the size and the toughness and the grind and stuff is all speed. So it used to be if a guy was under six foot, you know, he wouldn't get really a look, right? Now it's like anybody who's fast is like the new size. It's the new 6'5" defenseman. Yep. You know, he didn't have to be mobile, right? But he just take up space. So, you know, as far as, but you, talent-wise, development-wise, it's in all sports. You know, I'm not going to, society's softer.
Sure.
You know, the rules have changed. Things are different. It's not my game. I'm just glad I don't have to play it. I will cheer as hard as I can for the Detroit Red Wings and my team. But like I said, I'm glad that and I thought that I was a little late to the party anyways. I figured like late 70s, 80s, I would have been really right in the mainstream of my game. But I'm not arguing. I think that the timing is, you know, the gods. God put me in the good spot.
My last question for you today is the game changed a number of years ago when all of a sudden baseball announced everybody was going to wear a helmet to hit, and everybody followed right after that. football, obviously, but a lot of sports now require, especially little leagues and things like that too. So the helmet was, I think, the biggest improvement in any of the games when you start talking about head injuries. And of course, we know with the NFL and all the other issues that they've incurred with that. But listen, it's been a real pleasure with you today. I've enjoyed the hell out of you. And I got to try that cannabis.
Yeah, you do.
Here's the whole thing, right? You got to
Hey, wait a minute. Will my fastball come back?
No.
Absolutely. If you never want to smoke it either, you never have to smoke it.
Okay.
Yeah.
I give you a couple drops, you're good to go.
Oh, well, here's
no, but it'll improve your changeup.
I thought it was like.
All right. Here's my last question, and it's something that we shouldn't have saved it to last because people want to hear about this. We had Ken Dryden on a while ago talking about the new book he's written about Scotty Bowman, a very difficult person, a lot like playing for Scotty. I've seen quotes to the effect you did because you trusted him, but you didn't like Babs. Talk about that.
No, I see. There you go again.
Yeah, there he goes.
Are you misquote? You're going to misquote because I said that with Mike Babcock. But the differences between Scotty Bowman and Mike Babcock is this. It was always the Detroit Red Wings head coach, Scotty Bowman. And it was always Mike Babcock, head coach of the Detroit Red Wings, Toronto Maple Leafs, whatever. Which order does that go in? Right? Yeah. So when I say that, is here's the difference between Scotty Bowman. You could absolutely 100% disagree with what he was doing and be mad and pissed and whatever. But at the end of the day, you knew it was all about winning the cup. Yep. So you're going to sacrifice, because one thing about Scotty Bowman, he would berate you to no end, the worst ever as a hockey player.
Really?
Never as a human being.
Yeah.
Right. And when you lose respect, it goes back to the Lemieux. You have to have respect for people. And the way that Mike Babcock treated people, I don't agree with. So that's where you have, and that also runs its course when it's my way or the highway. Yeah. When you don't believe that at the end of the day, a guy like Scotty is just collecting rings. He just wanted to make your guys' lives tough in the media. That's his whole game. It's just misnamed this and that, and you figure it out. Scotty Bowman, we used to call him Rain Man, not to his face, but he's like, he's so far ahead. He's five moves ahead. Gary Kasparov. I love the man. I love the man. I didn't always, get along with him, but I always trusted him. And for me, it's biased because my Hall of Fame moment is, after he retired in 2002, standing beside the biggest bowl of shrimp cocktail at the Illich's house that you could see. And he comes up and he says, "Mac, the one thing I want to tell I didn't tell my players how much I appreciate them." I was like, "Yeah, thanks, Scotty. I appreciate you too. You brought me league." He says, "No, shut up." I'm like, "Well, okay." He goes, "You're my second favorite right winger ever to play for me next to Guy Lafleur. I hope you're not mad." And then boom, he was gone. I got that going for him too.
Kidding.
Yeah, Mac, I want to thank you for coming on too. Really do. And I'm going to tell you this. Maybe you've heard this before. I've been covering sports for 46 years and big time major league sports. And the question that I get.
Oh, stop it.
And Fred Heumann gets too. Who are your favorite athletes to interview in all the sports? By far, hockey players. You guys are the brightest. You're the most outspoken. You're the most opinionated, and you're the most fun. So thanks for coming on. I really appreciate it.
You know what, Bob? You're so full of shit, you stink. You know what I mean?
One more editing for Brandon to do. Wow.
I just posted on Facebook, which I never do, last night, my favorite 30 people to cover an interview in my 38-year career, and D-Max on the list.
Ah, thank you, Freddie. Thank you.
Good luck, Mac.
Thank you. You bet, Bob. Brandon, good to see you, kid. And we'll see you guys. Hey, you got my number. Anytime you need anything, let me know.
Thanks so much. And
thanks, Darren. Have a great day.
Joining us today. Thank you for joining us. I know you enjoyed the interview with Mac. Have a great weekend, everybody, and we'll see you on Monday.